out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 2nd of April, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. I'd just like to say happy Easter to everyone, as it's Easter Monday today. I was going to be joined by Max Musson, but he's unable to be here. So I thought I might as well do something which I don't very often do, but since it is Easter Monday, I thought I'd talk a bit about Christian identity. We've also had a couple of very sad instances recently. Pastor James Wickstrom, he passed away, and also Pastor Mark Downey passed away. Both Christian identity teachers, both of them two seed line teachers. They have slight differences, and all these Christian identity teachers have slight differences, because it's not really about doctrine. It's about study. It's about studying the Bible and studying how it fits in with history. It's not a different denomination. I think this confuses people. I think it's like it's Catholic, or it's Orthodox, or it's Protestant. You could follow either of those and still be a student of Christian identity. It doesn't contradict the Bible. It takes the Bible very, very seriously and looks at what the words actually meant, specifically in the Greek and in the Latin and in the Hebrew and in the earliest languages that it was actually written in. Because a lot of the words have been universalized today, especially when you think a lot of the people that helped with the translating of the Bible into English went to Jews and asked them to help. And Christian identity people take it very seriously when Jesus Christ himself makes the accusation that the Jews are the sons of the devil. And he doesn't just make this accusation once. He calls Judas Iscariot a devil. And of course, Judas Iscariot's name is Judah, Jew. He was from he was a Judean. He was either from the tribe of Judah or he was a Judean. And the rest of the disciples were all from the tribe of Benjamin. They were all from Galilee, and Galilee was settled by the tribe of Benjamin after the Judeans returned from, or the Hebrews returned from their exile. When they returned from their exile to Babylon, it was only about 1% of the actual tribes of Israel that returned. It was only 10% of the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. And since there were 12 tribes in all, that means it was only about 1%. So that means the other 99% are not accounted for. And the traditional church interpretation of that is, oh, they just disappeared. They blended in with the Assyrians and the Babylonians. Never mind the fact that the commandment to them was not to interbreed with anybody else, because the promises were made to one man, that was Abraham, and the offspring that came from him and Sarah was his half-sister. So the promises were made to him that through his son Isaac and through his son Jacob, Israel, many nations and many kings would come from his loins. And that was the faith that Abraham had. The faith that Abraham had was that these kings and nations would come from his loins and they would rule the world, basically, which is what the white race does. Now, the church says that Israel is a spiritual thing and Christians are now Israel, whereas Christian identity says, no, it's actually factual. The white race is Israel, and all the promises that were made and the covenants that were made in the Old Testament were made with a specific group of people, and it's still with a specific group of people, and we just ended up in Europe. And you can trace the various dispersions into Europe from the Trojan times, really, and onwards. You can trace these dispersions. You had, when Moses was in Egypt, there was a large portion of the Israelites that actually left before he did, and you can tell that from the census. Judah, the tribe of Judah, which is the kingly tribe, the kings were descended from Judah. His firstborn was called Zerah, secondborn was called Pharez, and they were twins. And the Bible makes a big point of telling you when they were born, and the fact that they were born from a pure Israelite coupling, because before that, Judah had married a Canaanite woman, and two of his sons by her died, and the other one is mentioned in a census, but nothing else, because, of course, he couldn't inherit anything, because his mother wasn't an Israelite. She was a Canaanite. He was a bastard, so he had no inheritance whatsoever. Zerah and Pharez had the inheritance, because they were the twins, and Zerah had the red cord tied around his hand to show that he was the firstborn. Well, Zerah disappears while Moses is in Egypt, and as the census tells us, others disappeared as well. And then we hear about his sons, Calcol and Darda, later on in the Bible. They're mentioned as being great people, great kings. And if we look in the pagan histories, we can see that the ancestors of the Trojan kings go back to Zerah. They go back to one of his sons. So we have a confirmation there that the kingly line of Troy goes back to Zerah and Judah. And it goes back through a guy called Calcol. Then we also get this confirmed by the book of Maccabees, I believe it is, in the Apocrypha, where after the tribe of Judah have returned back to Jerusalem, an envoy of the Lacedaemonians or the Spartans travel to Jerusalem and say, look at our records, we've been looking at our history and our genealogies, and we've discovered that you are our brothers, we are descended from you. And of course, this is the way that they were descended from the tribe of Judah, is through Zerah, and the Spartans were descended from the Trojans. And one of the symbols that they had to show that the symbol that they had to also show proof that they were brothers was an eagle with a dragon in its claws, or an eagle with a snake in its claws, which I believe is a symbol of Dan. I mean, each one of these tribes of Israel was given heraldry when Abraham was dying. It was either Abraham was dying or Isaac was dying. Jacob Israel, it was dying actually, because it was his 12 sons. Jacob Israel, when he was dying, he gave prophecies for each one of his sons. And the prophecies is sort of the way that they would behave. And it was also taken as heraldry, and that was the symbol. Later on, we see things like the white horse. We see the dragon, or the eagle with the dragon in its claws. We see a goblet of wine. We see a hind, you know, the white hart that we see, the white deer. We still see lots of pubs called the White Hart in Britain today. So heraldry goes back to these prophecies. So you had Zerah, he left with his load of people, and then Moses leaves Egypt with his people, and later on there's a plague, and Moses is told to make a cross with a snake on it, which is the symbol we have today for medicine, which is the cross with the snake on it. And this cross with the snake on it heals a lot of people. And after that, again, a large group of people leave. So we have people, two main dispersions happening before they left Egypt and after they left Egypt. And then we have the Israelites take on their land. They have from the north of Syria up to Egypt at one point, Palmyra, the place that we hear about that ISIS destroyed. That was built by Solomon in the middle of the desert. And he managed to sink down wells and get to an aquifer and water the place. And it was a marvel of the ancient world. And I mean, that place was old by Roman times. But that was pretty much the northern extent of the Israelites. And that shows you that Tyre and Sidon and Syria, that was land that was occupied by the tribes of Israel. And it tells us that in the Old Testament. So when you hear about the king of Tyre helping Solomon build his temple, that's because he was an Israelite. And these kings of Tyre and Sidon, they were Israelites. They moved on to Carthage, and they built Carthage. For the first couple of hundred years, they kept the laws. They kept themselves pure. And then after that, they fell to idolatry. The Canaanites moved in over in Carthage, and the Israelites didn't wipe out all the Canaanites. They turned them into servants and slaves and what have you. But the Israelites themselves, they also had that coastal strip. If you look on the map today, you look at Palestine, you see there's a big coastal strip there, absolutely perfect for pushing boats off from the beach and going and colonizing the rest of the world. So you had lots of people that left there at the time. And before Assyria and Babylon moved into the countries and deported them all, there were plenty of people that were moving off from them. And when you think that they had this area of land going right up to Palmyra, that was right at the time that the Phoenician Empire started off. So when we read about the exploits of the Phoenician Empire, what we are really reading about are the exploits of these tribes of Israel. And their histories and their myths, things such as Hercules and the trials of Hercules, it goes back to Samson. And the Greeks then took on these Phoenician myths. So you can see a link between what later became Greek paganism actually goes back to these original Hebrew ideas and when they were the Phoenician Empire. And they also had contacts with Britain. Obviously, Brutus, the king of Troy, he made his way over to Britain and was the first person of note to actually people the country and give his name to the country. And we have lots of proof of that. And then afterwards, at about, I think it's the 5th century BC, 7th century BC, we end up with the sacking of Israel and the sacking of Judah by the Babylonians and the Assyrians. And they basically removed the 10 tribes. They removed them to Assyria, just up a sort of Iran, Iraq area. And then later on, they removed the tribe of Judah and Benjamin, and they removed them to Babylon. And the tribes that were removed to Assyria, they occupied this bit of land there for a while, and then they decided that they were going to move. And that's written about in the book of Esdras, which is in the Apocrypha again. And it tells you there that they wanted to find a new land that was unpeopled, where they could obey their laws in peace, and they weren't going to get invaded. And there's also prophecies that they would eventually come to a new land where they would be safe and they wouldn't be invaded. And this prophecy was given to them when they were in the land of Israel and Judah. So it wasn't talking about the land of Canaan. It was talking about somewhere else. It's quite a few verses about it, actually, 3 or 4 verses, I think, if I remember rightly. And it tells you that they crossed over in the northern straits of the Euphrates, which is right up in the top there under the Black Sea, and they made their way into Europe. And we've also got a huge, great stone carving in Persia, which tells you the names of the people that were living in that area. And it tells you that, and it's in 4 different languages. One of the languages calls them Scythians, and another language calls them Cimmerians or Goma, Khmer. And that goes back to King Omri. So they're called the Gumri, Cumri. I mean, it's hard to pronounce, but it's obviously the origin of the Cimmerians. So the Cimmerians and the Scythians were one people at one time. And over the years and over the travels, they split into 2 different peoples. You had the Cimmerians and you had the Scythians. And the Scythians were pushing the Cimmerians westwards. And they ended up giving their name to Crimea and various other places. They ended up in Denmark, in the Chersonese. That's why we've got places named after the Cymry in Denmark. The same people. And the Scythians, they gave their name to Scythia, of course. And, of course, this is why there was a link between Scythia and a link between the tribe of Judah when they went back to Jerusalem and Judea. And you had Scythopolis there, named after them. But they went after the Cimmerians. They got moved out themselves from where they're actually living, from Scythia. And as they made their way into Europe, we have the the Romans and the Greeks that wrote down the geographies and the peoples and the ethnicities. And they called these Scythians, they called them Germain, as in genuine, because they were the genuine Scythians. And of course, Germain then became German, and the word Scythian became Saxon, because it's the S, X, C, T in the words themselves are very, very close together. When you study these languages, you see that there are certain letters which some languages didn't have and are interchangeable. Especially if you look at Waddell's work, that's what a lot of his work relies upon. He's not Christian identity at all. L.A. Waddell. And a lot of his work is quite way out there. But at the same time, I mean, he is correct in the fact that these letters are interchangeable. As I was saying, the G and the C and the Gomri and the Cymry are interchangeable. So then we end up with the Cimmerians in Britain as the Cymry, and we end up with the Saxons or the Scythians in Germany as the Saxons. And these people can be traced back to these tribes of Israel, and these earlier peoples that were in Europe can also be traced back to these earlier pushes into Europe. And Christian identity interprets the Bible with that backdrop, which fits in with all of our ancient histories. And the modern church today will try and say that the Bible is, you know, it's fairy stories or it's allegory or it really doesn't matter that much. And a lot of Christians today think that as well. But that's not true. You know, a lot of it is a history book. It does have poetry in there. It does have allegory in there and parables, but it also has a history of these people and our history as Europeans. And you can check this. I mean, one of the bits that really confirmed it for me was looking at the megaliths that we have in Britain. We have stone circles and we have dolmens and standing stones. And the only place they are ever written about is in the Old Testament. There's a dozen or so verses talking about them. God instructs the Israelites that wherever they go, they must put up these waymarkers, they must put up these standing stones. He instructs them to put up particular standing stones and whitewash them in lime and put the words of the law on them. He also tells them to, well, they put up stones in a heap, they put up cairns, they put up stone circles, and they built dolmens. Abraham, he bought a field. And it tells you in the Old Testament, it was a field with a cave in it. We don't get fields with caves in it. You get mountains with caves in it. So that cave was obviously a man-made cave, which is a barrow, like the long barrows that we have in Britain. And we also have a lot of links between the practices of the ancient Druids and the practices of the Levites. The ancient Druids had to prove that they had been free men going back 10 generations, and the Levites had to prove that they had been free men going back 10 generations. The Druids made sacrifices for sin, and the Levites made sacrifices for sin. I mean, both groups wore white. And you can look into this, and you can see that there are lots and lots of similarities between them. And when we get to St. Paul, we get to the time of Christ. He makes it quite clear that he's only come for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And you can look at Flavius Josephus. He tells us that the Israelites they did go up north of the Euphrates, and there's too many of them to even number by this time. And he says that all there are in Judea are the two tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Then you get the epistle of James, and he's writing to the 12 tribes that are scattered abroad. It's quite clear in the New Testament that these 12 tribes are still there. They did not melt into the peoples that they were among. I mean, the book of Revelation talks about these 12 tribes and how the heavenly Jerusalem will be named for each one of them and the gates. And if you're not a part of these 12 tribes, then none of this is for you. None of it is for you. And it's quite exclusive throughout the Bible. It's exclusive. And this is why you get confusions. And the Jews have introduced confusions, particularly with the word Gentiles. The word Gentiles means nations. So when they were using that word, you couldn't have an individual person being a nation, which is the way that it's interpreted now. And when it's talking about the Gentiles, and it means the nations, you have to look at the context, because it could be talking about the nations that were promised to Abraham. And it makes a lot of reference to the faith of Abraham in the New Testament, because that's what it's talking about. I mean, that was the faith that Abraham had, was in the promise that God gave him. And the promise that God gave him was that these nations would come from him. The promise wasn't that many nations would call him their father. The promise was that many nations would come from his loins. You also have to check what's actually written there in the Bible, because a lot of the time, churches and churchmen will repeat passages from it with one or two words changed than what is actually in there. I mean, one of them in particular is where there's a parable and Jesus is talking about goat nations and sheep nations. And he makes it quite clear that he's talking about nations, not individuals. And the church will claim that the sheep are the good people in the nation and the goats are the bad people in the nation. But it's not. It's talking about specific nations. And St. Paul talks about the vessels that are created for destruction, which is Esau, Edom, the Jews, and the vessels which are created for glory, which is Israel. And it tells you in the New Testament, it repeats a verse from the Old Testament where it says that Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. And you can go back and look at that verse. And there's a reply to it, and I thought Esau was the one that you loved, and this is the way that we are today. We think the Jews are the ones that Jesus loved, but the Jews themselves were bastards. They admitted that pretty much by saying we only have one father, we don't have two. And Christ said, well, your father is the devil, and they said, ah, but Abraham was our father. And Christ said, well, yes, well, God could raise up these stones to say that they came from Abraham, but they still wouldn't be the children of the promise. And that's because, of course, the promise was that these nations would come from his loins. So, of course, he could create people from Abraham, but they wouldn't be the people from the promise. And Christian identity people take these promises very, very seriously. I mean, if God is truth, and Jesus Christ said that he was the way, the truth, and the life. If what he says is the truth, then it stands for all time, and he cannot be a liar. So when he makes these exclusive promises in the Old Testament, they are still in play today, and they are still in play in the New Testament. You can't go back on his word, and we can see proof of this where one of the commandments is that only the Levites may touch the Ark of the Covenant. And there's one instance where the Ark of the Covenant falls off, starts to fall off the wagon that it's on, and someone jumps forwards to try and prevent it from falling to the ground. Obviously a good thing, but he is instantly killed from thunderbolt from the sky. And that is because God said only the Levites may touch this. So God can't go back on his word. And this explains a lot of some of the strange things you see happening in the Bible. I mean, you see Noah curses it's a bit of an awkward position that Noah was put in by his son Ham, but he curses Canaan and says that he's going to be a slave to his brothers. But of course, God said to the Israelites, well, you've got to kill these Canaanites. But because Noah had made this curse, they ended up not killing them all, and they ended up making them into slaves. So you've got cross purposes sometimes in the Old Testament between what God says and what the people say, and things can't be changed. Once God has said something, that's like it's set in stone. It lasts for all time. And if Jesus says that somebody is a devil and their father is the devil, and he was a murderer from the beginning and he's the master of lies, then that means the descendants of those people are devils. It's quite clear. It was quite clear also that he was making a reference to Cain back then. And 2 seed line is basically the study of these 2 seed lines in history. If you go back to Genesis, you can see with the allegorical fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, when Adam and Eve eat of that, there is a curse, and the curse is I will put enmity between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. And that is quite clearly plural. The churches try to say that the seed of the woman is Jesus Christ, but if the seed of the woman is just Jesus Christ, then who was the seed of the serpent? Are we still waiting for the seed of the serpent? And why would God be making that prophecy 5,000 years before this was actually going to happen? The people concerned would have no idea what it was actually about. What it was talking about is the seed of the serpent is Cain and Cain's line, and the seed of the woman is Adam's line, because the woman came from Adam, and Cain was a bastard. And people may say, well, there isn't much information about that in the Bible. But if you look at at the studies that have been done on those first few chapters of Genesis, you can see that there is some confusion with the translation. And you can go back and look at the Targums, and they make it quite clear that Eve had intercourse with the serpent. Adam was cuckolded by her, and the offspring was Cain. And you can see it infers to that in the Book of Enoch, and they talk about it in the Celtic liturgies, and all the way through the Bible it makes it clear that Cain is not Adam's son. Cain is never included in any of the genealogies of Adam. Adam was not his father. And the offspring of Cain, in the books of Adam and Eve, it makes it quite clear that the worst thing that the sons of Adam could ever possibly do is have intercourse with the children of Cain. And if they do, they will never be able to get back to being the people that they once were. And the whole Bible is racial. All these laws that were given to the Israelites were to compound that fact into them, that they must not interbreed with anyone else. I mean, they were not allowed to sow the field with two different types of seed. They were not allowed to yoke two different types of animal together. They were not allowed to wear two different types of clothing, you know, like cotton and wool. They were not allowed to put two different types of food together. All these laws, which people think, well, they're very strange laws. Well, they were made to remind them of the fact that they must not interbreed with anyone else. And they were chosen to be a priestly nation among men. I mean, all white men come from Adam, and are descended from Adam. And this one particular group were chosen to be a priestly nation, a peculiar nation. And God says, "You alone have I loved of all the families of the earth." Now, not all of the Israelites were given the law. Only the ones that were under Moses were given the law. And St. Paul makes reference to that as well, that the Israelites that he's talking to, the Romans, these are the ones that were descended from the peoples that left Egypt before Moses actually did. And he makes reference to them, the fact that they were never under the law because they weren't under Moses. And he talks about sharing the shared fathers that they have. And he mentions to other groups that they were under the cloud, if that's following the cloud, that the form that God took when he was leading Moses to what they saw as the promised land, this land of Canaan. And so it's basically studying, Christian identity is basically studying the Bible and seeing how it all fits in with the way that the world is today. I mean, I've spoken very little about the Jews in this, but I've covered them in lots of places elsewhere. The Jews are descended from Cain, and they are descended from the Canaanites, the bastard race, the interbred race, and that's all the Jews have ever done is interbreed. And once you understand that the Jews are the Canaanites of the Old Testament, then the Bible suddenly makes a lot more sense. If you think that today's Jews were the Israelites, then you think, well, hang on a minute. You know, these bastards, these bankers, these pornographers, these smut peddlers, they were the chosen ones of God? That doesn't make any sense. Why are they so few now? Why have none of these prophecies about them ever come true? And that's because they are the Canaanites. They're the cursed ones of the Old Testament. And they're just put here to tempt us. That's purely what all that they are for is to tempt us. They're here to be thorns in our sides and pricks in our eyes. And the Bible tells the history of all of this, all the way going back to Eve sleeping with the serpent. And of course, it wasn't a physical serpent. That was just a pejorative name for them. Same as the Bible has pejorative names for lots of these other races. It calls them scorpions, locusts, owls, dragons, dogs, dirty birds, or filthy birds, or whatever it calls it. dragons, all these different names it has for these other races. And serpent is one of them. It says that he was a serpent, was more subtle than the other beasts of the field. Beasts of the field is another phrase that it uses for these other beings. And a certain portion of Christian identity believe that these other beings were not created by God. That's why they're not named. That's why they are just named after things that were created by God, like the animals that inhabit the earth with us. Some people believe that that they were created when God created the beasts of the field. But the beasts of the field were the beasts that were actually used in the field. And it's just a pejorative name that is used for these other races. And that's just some of the ideas that go on in Christian identity. And they may sound a little bit crazy to people who haven't heard them before. But if you look into it and properly look into it, you will see that there is tons of evidence for this. I wouldn't believe it myself if there wasn't tons and tons of evidence for it, because I know how different it is from the traditional beliefs of what's in the Bible and what Christianity is. So anyway, that's a little bit about Christian identity. I hope you enjoyed that. I'll be back tomorrow with Nat Dainlaw. Thank you very much for listening. God bless and hail victory.